Hey, Steele, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Oh man, you almost sounded like Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam. You just needed to drag it out just a little bit more.
Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was looking for. Steele, you have someone giggling next to you.
Oh yeah, the giggler.
Julia, she's back. She's the best.
Is she? Are you known as the giggler? Is that like your
Thankfully,
street name?
no. Oh God, I shouldn't have even.
No one calls you the giggler. Come
No,
on.
it's my superhero name.
Do you have a nickname?
No.
Have you ever had a nickname, Steele?
My Steele is a nickname. That's not my actual name.
That's not like a
I understand
nickname,
that.
though.
Yeah. Like I don't know, Monkey Boy or something. I don't know.
Ely?
Ely? No, I don't
Yeah.
know. I'll have to think on that one.
Okay.
The Man of
Well,
Steel. That's what everybody thinks is real funny. Or Iron. Oh, because steel and iron are both metals,
yeah, I
which
got
is
it.
very inventive.
Clever.
Yeah.
Do you have a nickname, Dave?
The only time I ever had a nickname was when I was just a small young man that had just moved from Kansas to New Jersey. And they called me Toto.
That's amazing.
Because of the Africa song, or because you came from Kansas?
I think it's because I came from Kansas, but that song's terrific as well. Toto's very talented. They don't just have that one song; they've got a whole catalog still.
Okay.
But guys, so I've been reading a book called *The Skunk* by a children's author called Mac Barnett. You guys have probably never read this book, but
No.
it's fantastic.
I read a poem called The Skunk. It's by
Yeah,
Robert
this is
Lowell.
different guy. How's that poem? Is it a quality? It's something I should look at.
It's amazing. It's this, he's kind of the most important American confessional poet, and it's basically him admitting embarrassing things about himself and digging through his neighbor's trash and being a wreck.
I saw a video of a cop trying to take a yogurt container off a skunk's head. Which is really good. Like, it's a really, really, really good video. And it's not confessional.
It's not professionally produced, but it's
No,
good.
it's lively. You guys should
Oh
watch it.
man, it sounds great. I'd watch a feature film based on that. That
I mean,
sounds
I wanted
great.
it to go on and on, honestly.
Yeah. Who would you want to play the skunk, Dave?
You.
I get my big break.
Just get a little yogurt container. Stick your
Oh,
head in
yeah.
there.
So tell us about the
And of
skunk, Dave.
course, it's a psychological thriller for children.
What?
This guy, he leaves his home. There's a skunk standing on his doorstep, and he's like, "Hey, well, skunk, that's a little bit strange." He's walking down the street. The skunk's following him. Eventually, he realizes this skunk is intentionally tailing me. And he doesn't know why. It's just a skunk. He can't get answers from it because it's a skunk. It can't talk. So throughout the book, he's dealing with this skunk following him until he snaps and he runs away. He changes his whole life, moves, changes his name. And when he finally gets away from the skunk, he starts to worry, well, where is the skunk? What's going on with the skunk? So he ends up, in the end of the book, following the skunk.
This is like What About Bob, but in a book form.
I feel like this model of attachment makes me very anxious.
Yeah, I don't know that it's a healthy thing, but it's
Seems.
fantastic. I've read it like 10 times in the past week, and it makes me think about psychological thrillers, undercover work, and the psychological issues you may have in your own life regarding tailing people and
So,
paranoia.
yeah, or interest.
Interest in stalking and paranoia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I think everybody is. So do you guys have any type of paranoia type things? Any undercover work you can share with us?
It's been long enough now. Statute of limitations has lapsed. Sure.
Yeah, right? I feel like I'm not that paranoid that people are following me, but I've really liked to follow people, like when I was a teenager. in ways that now seem so inappropriate.
Tell us more.
I would, like, be driving around the neighborhood with, like, my friends, and we would, like, see someone who we, like, seemed like they were, like, our age, and we would just follow them in our car, like, around the neighborhood, and be like, where do you think he's going?
Let's find out.
Follow him. It was like we had nothing else to do. It was stalking out of, like, the pit of boredom.
But also curiosity.
But curiosity and, like, having resources, being, like, teenagers in a car. Like, all I did was drive around. Yeah, we were really into following people, and we learned a lot.
What kind of things did you learn?
Okay.
About where people went. I don't know. It was benign.
We learned a lot.
It was benign. I was not a government agent.
Where were you doing this? Where are you from?
I'm from Kentucky. I'm from Lexington, okay. Kentucky.
We'll definitely
There's
get
not
into
a
this.
Lot to do there for teenagers. Yeah.
I have a kind of comparable story, but different, I would say.
Less creepy?
Less aimless.
Oh, okay. Creepier, maybe.
Perhaps.
So, this was totally aimless. That's a good word.
So, my best friend, Jack Bangeter, when we were 15 years old, his dad was a painter. He'd been living in Russia for many years, moved back to Boise, and was living in the Idaho Hotel. He was out at a bar, the Neurolux, with the painter friend of his. They'd been drinking, and he gets up and he leaves, and he says, he hugs his friend and says, I love you, brother. There's a guy in the bar that decides that Jack's dad is gay because of this and attacks him, punches him in the face.
Oh, my God.
And then follows him back to his hotel and assaults him again. Jack's dad's shaken up. He goes up to his room, calls a friend, says, come pick me up. The friend comes a couple hours later. And when Jack's dad leaves a couple of hours later for his friend to pick him up, the same man was there waiting for him.
Oh, my God.
And beat him very badly in the street. And he lost sight in one of his eyes, like fractured his orbital.
That's terrible.
It was awful. So it was this homophobic hate crime against a man who coincidentally happened not to be gay, which doesn't make it any less horrific or any of a hate crime. So we were 15 at the time and went to visit Jack's dad, and his face is all, you know, mangled and swollen. And so Jack and Tad Albrecht and I decided that we were going to organize some vigilante justice downtown.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, obviously. It was like, we felt terrible, we felt powerless, and this was like something we could do for
You're
our friend.
You're a teenager.
So we all went to the thrift store and we bought like three-piece suits, like zoot suit kind of suits. We dressed up and went to downtown Boise, and Tad was like, we're vigilantes, let's go look for this guy. And so we went around looking for the guy who had attacked Jack's dad. And we obviously didn't find anything, but we just went and ran around and had fun and were looking for people and looking for anyone suspicious. And that's my only following.
That is such a serious story.
See, this is why Dave doesn't... Dave and I are very different on this podcast. He's always like, oh, damn it. Okay, we have a guest that's funny or fun or happy.
I'm happy. I just, like, was a teenager with a car.
So,
nobody
yeah, we
got
were,
beat up.
We were
there
looking...
was some latent homophobia in the town, but sure. It didn't manifest itself in violence that I knew of.
So Jack's dad lost his sight in his eye.
That's
never
terrible.
Recovered it. So it affected his painting career, definitely. But he testified eventually in D.C. of anti-hate crime legislation that was passed on the federal level. And the guy who assaulted him went to Europe and was in Europe for many years, but was arrested by Interpol and extradited eventually and I think served prison time for his assault.
Wow.
Wow, Steele, this sounds like a very sad short story you could write. It's literary. I have one that's not as depressing.
Good!
But maybe, so in college, we made a gorilla suit. Yeah. Steele, you remember?
Yeah. All too well.
Yeah, I think everyone spent some time inside the gorilla suit. But we just made it. I brought this gorilla mask back from my home in New Jersey after the break. And me and my best friend went to the fabric store and bought the fabric. And then, of course, Howard had a sewing machine, so we sewed a gorilla suit. And the first time we took it out for a spin, I'm wearing the gorilla suit, and I see a guy from that I knew 3 years ago and I had a grudge against. And I was just being playful. I ran up to him.
You're in the suit, so you're liberated, right?
You kept a grudge for 3 years? Move on.
He knows that now, but Dave was troubled.
Sorry, Dave. Well,
No, it was interrupted by a 2-year mission, so like I came back. So it's
no
still
time
like,
for grudges. Yeah, okay, seriously. Okay.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's still, and it's just a mild grudge. But he, okay. You know, there'd been some hijinks in the dorms involving like ice and pillows and stuff like that. Not like a huge grudge,
it's a
but just like
a grudge.
But you're like, this guy's kind of a jerk.
Yeah. So I ran up to him and I started, you know, making all sorts of gorilla sounds, and I jump on his back and I'm still making gorilla sounds. He has no idea who it is. Eventually he pushes me off and he gets inside an apartment kind of freaked out. And that's my story.
Wow.
So to this day, you have the power of knowing that you did it to him, but he has no idea who this gorilla is.
And I never saw him again. That's the one. That's the last time I ever saw him.
Wow. So,
do you think it's like a skunk-like story where he's now traveling the country looking for a gorilla?
Yes.
I think he has to remember it. I mean, how many times do you get jumped on by a small
he's
man
probably
wearing a gorilla
so
suit?
Disturbed.
Or super into it.
Yeah, I guess.
But I taught him a lesson. I won. I won the whatever the girl battle was. He never got
I
me
taught
again.
Him a lesson.
No more ice in my pillow. He's just got this haunted memory of a gorilla.
But that doesn't make any sense because he doesn't know it was you that got the revenge. So how does he know not to put ice in your pillow?
Steel, you don't understand psychological thrillers. This whole story is a psychological thriller.
I'm
like,
so
who
interested
knows what happened.
That you're spying, like, in both cases involve, like, a costume and a performance.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I was like, want to know what these people are doing.
Yeah, that's totally lame, Julia. If your spying doesn't involve a costume,
no,
it's just not psychological
How can
enough.
We have the fantasy play that we wish to have within our gender roles unless we invent this elaborate kind of detective role to play in?
I guess.
Yeah, this goes all the way back to when we discussed friendship, Steele.
Yeah.
And male friendships just have a deeper meaning to them, I guess.
Julie's about to punch you, man. Be careful.
Through the microphone. If you had done more real spying,
you would know.
You might have more of a bond. Yeah. It's real risk.
The gorilla suit was amazing. I still remember.
Why did you make a gorilla suit?
That's just a silly question, Julia. We had a gorilla mask. Like, you don't just have a gorilla mask. You go and you make a gorilla suit.
If you give a mouse a cookie, kind of principle. The thing I remember about the gorilla suit, though, Dave, was we would go from, like, apartment to apartment when we'd see big groups of people gathered. And we would, like, one of us would kick in the door. Their gorilla would go run in and dance around. And then other of us would be holding a guitar and we would sing, like, mariachi music. Do you recall this?
I do. It was a very positive thing. It was a positive use for the gorilla suit rather than the terror that sometimes it was used for. So let's move on. Expert testimony, Julia. We got some questions for you.
Uh-huh.
So Lexington, Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
I believe that's the home of the Kentucky
Wildcats.
University of Kentucky. Yeah.
Tell me about the shirt you're wearing, in fact, in studio today.
Oh, yeah. I'm wearing this Lexington rainbow shirt. Which is great. In addition to being a queer allies shirt, which I really like, I feel really compelled in the wake of these stories to be like, I'm
safe
really
space.
Pro-gay in every way and really pro-queer. Anyway, I'm wearing this rainbow shirt that has, there was once in Lexington a competition in the 70s to make a logo for the city that would be painted on the side of a building. And this amazing rainbow won that logo competition because it was so friendly. And it was painted on the side of a building and it said Lexington under it. And then in the 80s, they tore the building down, which is sad. Mm. I think they should put another giant rainbow logo in Lexington, especially as it now has these other more intense other kinds of connotations. And anyway, now there are t-shirts and I have one and I like to wear it.
But Lexington knocking down the building had nothing to do with embarrassment about being associated with the rainbow.
So there are demographics of Lexington. There's actually a fairly large per capita gay population in Lexington, which sadly was not a part of my growing up there. I didn't really know anyone gay or queer as a kid, which I think would have been really good for me, but there is a fairly large gay population per capita there.
In Lexington?
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about the Wildcats. And
oh, yeah.
I know that your love of the specific tone of blue.
It's so good.
What is it? It has a name or something, right? It's
Wildcat like, Blue? Kentucky Blue.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Woo! What is it? Describe it. Why is it so good?
Oh, it's the best blue. It's brighter than Duke Blue is what it is. And brighter is better. It's the royalest royal blue, and I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read a thing about it. It's a slightly modified version of Pantone 286 for you color nerds out there. And for a long time, your Facebook profile pic was just a panel of this blue color.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that that was Kentucky blue.
Oh, it wasn't?
That was the bluest blue I could find. I'm a big blue. I don't know if this is very interesting.
This is very interesting.
I'm a big lover of blue. my favorite color in the rainbow, as it were. And I wanted IKB, International Klein Blue, which is Eve Klein's, the blue that Eve Klein developed to produce his blue panels. But it turns out that doesn't actually look that great on Facebook. It doesn't look that good with Facebook blue. So I had this other blue. That's the story. Then that's not Wildcat Blue. That's like a yellower.
We'll have a little mini essay up on the website about the shades of blue that we just described with
so
technical
many.
Details.
Yeah, I love blue.
I'm still interested in the t-shirt because I pulled up the logo. It's a beautiful. It's actually a fantastic logo. When you wear the shirt around, do like people engage with you differently because you've got such this happy shirt with also the meaning of a gay pride in it? Do you?
That's a good question. I think people engage with me as a person who sits in a middling kind of place on a gender spectrum anyway. And so perhaps that's somewhat more pronounced when I'm wearing rainbow gear. But I mean, I don't think, like, I think people respond to me in a queer context often anyway. That is sometimes in a way that's excited and sometimes in a way that's antagonistic, and that's probably like more crystallized.
Whatever they're predisposed to seeing the rainbow.
Yeah, like probably ramps that up, you know? Uh-huh. Like the excitement or the scoff is probably like more intensified, but
and also
we were going to talk about gender so much.
We always do.
It's important.
Yeah, for real.
That's just a beautiful shirt. Yeah.
It's a great shirt. I love it. I think my brother is going to get one.
They still make
them? Which is great. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, they still make them. He was like, I want a t-shirt with that. I was like, you should get one.
There you go.
He was like, do you think it's okay if I wear it? I'm straight. I was like, yes. It is. People will think that you're a gay ally. He was like, good.
Yeah, right.
Or people will think that you're gay. And he was like, okay. I was like, you're really a good brother.
That's good.
So, I don't know why this has like become the topic.
No, it's good. Because expert testimony, Julia.
Yeah,
I have this rainbow shirt. I think gay rights is important.
There's a city that's not Lexington in Kentucky. I know you don't like to talk about it.
The best city.
Oh, it is.
It's my favorite place.
Oh, phew, good. How do you pronounce it?
Louisville.
How?
Louisville.
Can you slow that down for us yokels?
Louisville.
Wow.
Louisville.
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 Louisville? No, I want to throw like a Louis. I want it to be Louis.
You can say Louisville.
Uh-huh. Sounds so wrong.
But that's just incorrect.
It's like a vowel that we don't have. It's like a guttural.
Louisville.
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 Louisville. You're close, Steele, but there's more throw in it. Like, I don't know. Louisville.
Louisville.
I've heard that exact same sound in a lot of patients right before they vomit.
Totally. That's why I said guttural, right? It's like a... Yeah, it's a vomitous. But yeah, to me, deeply comforting sound.
I hear that sound. I'm running for some type of bucket or pan to put under them. Like, Louisville. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
That's nice.
Louisville.
I have a question about Kentucky. I was reading Wikipedia.
Yeah, I might not be an expert. I haven't lived there. I'm going on 10 years.
Well, you probably know about this. I think every Kentucky resident has to know about this. Wikipedia told me, Kentucky has the highest per capita number of deer and turkey in the U.S., as well as, quote, the largest free-ranging elk herd east of the Mississippi River.
I have never seen an elk. I don't know where all these elk are.
So it seems to me like that's a really particular claim to make. And all over the Kentucky and Lexington Wikipedia pages, there's a bunch of these, like, very nuanced, weird, like, we have the largest collection of 19th century ephemera between these three rivers. Like, they're making these really proud claims about tiny things.
No,
tell me about the Kentucky Psyche.
Well, God help us. I mean, the real Kentucky thing, right, is that it's the horse capital of the world, which is, I'm not so into. I mean, the horse industry is, like, terrible.
Have you been to the Derby?
I have not. I have been to the Oaks.
What's that?
It's the race the day before the Derby, the Friday before the Derby. I've been once. I can't really even watch it. It's really intense. But people totally go to the track. That's like a thing.
In Lexington?
In Lexington, there's Keeneland, which is not where the Derby is, but is a track that has a fall and spring meet and sales. And Churchill Downs is the track in Louisville, and people go to that track a lot also.
Have you wagered on horse racing? Have you gotten there and you're like, here's my trifecta?
No.
Oh, yeah. You never bet a trifecta?
No. I went to a horse track in California, and someone bet for me, and I won a little bit of money.
What is paramutual betting? I've heard that as a phrase, but I don't know what that means.
I'm not really a gambling man, as it were.
So we've veered far from our planned.
I know. I feel like I had maybe had more to offer you than this, but I just got really preoccupied with being like, we're talking about homophobia, and I really, really want to
set the record straight. Or set the record gay, as it were.
Yeah. Like, I think gender is a spectrum and sexuality is complicated and gay rights is important. I don't know. I felt really compelled.
Thanks, Julia. I agree. I think we could say we agree, but I don't want to speak for Dave.
I just, my friends who were, I didn't know, have any gay friends in high school, which sucked. But we were, Kentucky passed a one man, one woman amendment to the state constitution, a marriage amendment, when I was in high school. And that was the first political event that my friends and I were really involved in. Huh. Like, we were not mainstream people, we didn't do things, we were not politically engaged, and everyone was at least ostensibly heterosexual at that time, but we were like, this is not cool.
I had an experience. I was 14 years old. Before the summer I was turning 15, I went away for like a month long to a writing project at like a local liberal arts college in a tiny town in Idaho, and it was awesome. I loved it, and I met a guy there named Twin Falls, which is a town of maybe 30,000 people at the time. And we were 14, 15 years old. He was openly gay, out. First gay person I ever met. And we're still friends on Facebook. But I think about that. What kind of courage would you have to have to be out in a town of 40,000 people at 15 in Idaho?
It's incredible.
It was totally incredible.
Yeah.
He was awesome. He dyed, actually, one of the greatest haircuts. I grew big lamb chops or like Wolverine sideburns, and he dyed my hair and sideburns like a flaming red while I was there at the wedding. I thought it was amazing, but it looked terrible in photographs.
That's amazing. I'm trying to think of what else I can tell you about Kentucky.
I have questions.
Okay, good.
This was a direct quote from Wikipedia.
It's a great place.
Another direct quote from Wikipedia about horses.
I love this. I don't know anything about horses.
Lexington faces a rare challenge among American cities in that it must manage a rapidly growing population while maintaining the character of the surrounding horse farms, which give the region its identity. What's
Lexington
a horse farm?
Is a pinwheel. So downtown is at the middle of the pinwheel, and there are roads going out like spokes in all directions, which is a terrible way to plan a city. It's never do it. Just if you're planning a city, don't plan it like that. So there's...
You need a grid system. It's the grid system. That's how you do it.
The spoke is a bad model. So there's like downtown and UK's campus and some older neighborhoods, which is like where I grew up near downtown. Then there's New Circle Road, which is literally a circle.
Ring Road.
Yeah, around these spokes. And all of the spokes at one point went out into horse country. I mean, it was like downtown, campus, horse country. Now it's like downtown, campus, strip malls, subdivisions, horse country. Oh. And the subdivisions have the names of the horse farms that used to be on the land that they occupy. So, like, Hamburg Shopping Center, which, like, didn't exist when I was in Alabama. Like, didn't exist 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
But we all know Hamburg Shopping Center, so proceed.
It's a terrible place with, I mean, it's like, you know, it's a series of very big strip malls. It's on the land that used to be the Hamburg Horse Farm.
Ah, is that where hamburger comes from?
Yeah, they're actually horse meat.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you the name of Lexington's airport.
The Bluegrass Regional Airport.
It's really called that?
Yes.
And I noticed...
BGA.
Its address? It's on Man O' War Boulevard?
Oh, yeah, it's on Man O' War.
Come on!
Yeah.
This is for
it's
real.
Really
it's named
Keeneland.
After a horse.
Yes.
It's Man O' War with
Man
like
O' War.
A
yeah,
the
which
little
is the
symbol.
Name of a famous racehorse, yeah. That's Lexington.
That's too real. And that's just normal to you. To yeah, me, that sounds incredible and
kind
of
absurd.
I didn't know
that Man O' War was a horse until I was like,
you said where the airport was.
Like, it's just a road. It's actually a big road. It goes around a lot of the city also.
As is traditional, still asks all these unimportant questions, but I have a couple very important ones.
Pressing.
So, obviously, the national fast food chain that shares the name with Kentucky is Kentucky Fried Chicken.
That's true.
Is fried chicken important in Lexington? Is that something that the city is about?
No. No.
Bummer.
I've had KFC one time. People, when I travel, like when I've been to Europe or when I travel even in other parts of the country, people ask me about KFC. But it's not.
Because KFC is all over the world. It's in Europe.
They're like, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm American. And they're like, where in America are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Kentucky. It's one of the states in the middle. You probably don't know it. And they're like, KFC!
You're
fried chicken!
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks, Colonel.
So then is there a food that you would associate with Lexington? Is there something that like, you go to Lexington,
question.
This is what you need?
Regional cuisine.
You should eat at Alfalfa's if you go to Lexington. It's a restaurant on Main Street. It used to be on UK's campus. They have really good Hop and John, which
What's
is
that?
Hop and John is like a southern dish that I didn't realize was southern until I moved out of Kentucky. It's rice and black eyed peas and spicy stewed tomatoes with, and it's served with like green pepper and raw onion and cheese on top. And it's so good. And you should eat that at Alfalfa's.
Hoppin' John?
Hoppin' John.
Is it one word or is this hopping
Two
John?
Words, like okay. Hoppin', like yeah. Hopping, but no G. Hoppin' John.
Nice. Lexington is known as the Athens of the West.
It's true.
What's that about?
The 19th century.
Okay.
The Henry Clay Estate. Henry Clay Estate is there.
He was an Athenian.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I grew up across the street from the Henry Clay Estate. Graduated from Henry Clay High School. Wow. Probably what part of why I studied the 19th century.
Really? Understand the pathology of this man?
I mean, Kentuckians will tell you that he's really great, but he's not that great.
Okay.
He instantiated the fugitive slave law. Not that great.
The city is also host to a Jif peanut butter factory.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes the most peanut butter in the world.
Which smells for like a mile around.
That was what I was hoping.
Yeah. So it's on Winchester Road, one of the spokes that emerges from downtown Lexington and goes out towards Hamburg and towards like the subdivision where some friends in high school lived. So I drove on it a lot.
Following people.
Oh my God. Oh, that's like so real. But it's like this low to the ground building that's like more than a city block. And it's like, it doesn't obviously look like a factory. And it has this little bitty Jif sign on it. But it smells like all of Winchester Road for like blocks and blocks and blocks. Smells like peanuts.
Oh, that's nice. Like
that's
a roasted
amazing.
Peanut?
Like a roasted peanut.
Wow, that sounds like a cologne I'd like to have.
It's, yeah.
Another question that I have. I learned this from Wikipedia.
I need to read this Wikipedia page.
I do. In 2002, Lexington became the first city to launch a Thriller video reenactment as a Halloween festivity. The video's storyline and dance sequences are faithfully recreated, beginning outside the historic Kentucky Theater and featuring hundreds of zombies who attend rehearsals at nearby Mecca Live Studio in the weeks leading up to the parade. Please tell me you've been to this.
I've never witnessed that, but I I did know it was associated with the Kentucky, which is a great movie theater in Lexington where you should also go.
Okay.
Don't go to the strip malls. Go downtown. And I remember seeing pictures of it in the paper. That's all I got.
Because the King of Pop rules Lexington.
Yeah. You know, the Kentucky also has a...
He's buried there?
Yeah, I think he's buried in Lexington. Yeah.
With Man of War. They're good buddies.
Yeah. On Man of War at Bluegrass Regional Airport.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Kentucky also does, God, what's that thing? Let's do the time warp. Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
They have Rocky Horror Picture Show sing-alongs, like, once a month.
Cult classic, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a Transylvania University.
It's true.
Is this a finishing school for vampires?
Yes. It definitely is.
Awesome. That's all I needed to know.
It is. Yeah. I hope to work there after I finish my PhD.
Wonderful.
Sucking blood for all time.
Yeah. Once you get tenure, it's tenure for life.
Yeah.
Good college professorial PhD humor, guys.
We try.
So, Julia, you have an interest in the classical Greek world.
It's true.
What is your top Greek hero and why?
Oh, that's a good question.
And the and why makes it tough. Yeah.
Yeah. All of them. Heracles. Heracles is my top Greek hero because there's this great story where he has all these labors. So Heracles is just the Greek way of saying Hercules.
Yeah, she's just being, you know, educated.
I'm just like not Roman.
You and me both, buddy.
I'm not Roman, okay? So Heracles has this reputation for being kind of like big and dumb, which is like not my favorite
well-earned
reputation. Yeah. But there's two reasons why he's my favorite hero. One is that there's this great story where this woman, Omphale, is trying to hold Heracles captive. Mm. And she like sort of enchants him and gets him to like wear her clothes and wander around her, I don't know, house. He's sort of like sort of in love with her, but she's sort of enchanted him. And there's this like cool, weird gender bendy thing that happens, and there are these great paintings from like the 18th and 19th centuries of Heracles like dressed up as Omphale, like looking at himself in the mirror. So it's like this big dumb hero that's like caught up with this woman. But
it's actually the Rock recently released a film. And
oh my god,
the entire
this
thing
is like
was just
what
that.
This is like what the Rock needs.
Really? No, that's what it was. So it didn't do that well in the box office, but it was just an artistic triumph.
Yeah, it seemed like it was going to be. But I also like Heracles because he's very easy to recognize in vase paintings and other depictions because he's always wearing his lion skin cloak.
Ah.
So he has these labors, and one of them is that he has to kill the Nemean lion.
Yeah.
And after he kills the Nemean lion, he wears the lion skin.
We've all been there.
So you can always, like, look, and you see this guy in this little lion skin. That's Heracles.
He also cleaned a bunch of stables.
He did.
Lexington needs a Heracles.
Lexington needs Heracles. That's so true. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Steele, for that reminder. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff.
Can we talk a little bit about Homer versus Virgil and how
Homer's
is, like,
better.
A million times better?
Yeah, Homer's way better.
Yeah.
I mean,
why is Homer better?
Because
he's blind.
Yeah.
He composed orally.
Second point.
He's older.
Third point.
Nice.
His book is better.
Yeah. Big fourth point. He's not Roman.
He's not Roman.
Fifth point.
Yeah. Hands down.
We pretty much just handled that one.
Yeah.
No, there's no discussion there. It's over. Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't name his main character Aeneas. what a lame name.
Odysseus is way better.
Yeah, serious. Odysseus.
Yeah.
Agamemnon. Those are good names.
Solid.
Paris.
But let's say that they had a physical altercation. Let's take this out of the realm of what they accomplished.
Yeah.
And they were to fight. Who's going to win, Homer or Virgil?
Homer, he has two epics.
Yeah. Seriously. Left bicep, right bicep.
That's going to give Virgil kind of an advantage, I think.
No, think about Daredevil. Was Daredevil ever at a loss because he was blind?
No.
But that's because of the chemicals that were spilled on his eyes.
Homer has chemicals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seriously. How do you think you write a long poem? Take some chemicals, man.
Hey, well, I'm not attempting a PhD in poetry, so.
Yeah.
But thanks for sharing.
Me neither.
Yeah. What is your Achilles heel, since we're on the classical subject? This is a personal question, I know, but...
What's my Achilles heel? I have a lot of weaknesses that are, like, very obvious, I feel like. So what's my, like, secret hidden weakness that you'll, like, never find?
That'll kill you?
I don't know. Like, a food.
It's latent heart disease. I don't know it yet. It'll hit in 30 years.
Yeah. Like a fractured hip that will, like, cause me to fall in front of a bus.
I hope
you?
Not. You? My Achilles heel? Jack Doritos.
What?
I really like jacked Doritos.
What's a jack Dorito?
It's like a Dorito with extra flavor. They're like these like super intense, terrible chemical flavors. I feel awful after I eat them, but I eat them a lot.
You like Fritos, too.
I did eat some Fritos. That's the first time I've had them in years, and I was like, I like these.
But still, that's not a weakness. That's just accepting what your body needs. That's just listening to your body.
Jack
Doritos. My body is a liar, then.
Oh, pirate's booty. Pirate's booty is my Achilles heel.
That's a good one to have.
What is better than pirate's booty? Stuff is good.
Sometimes pirate's face. I'm not a...
Pirate hook. Do you have an Achilles heel?
Yes. Candy.
That's not a weakness, Steel. That's just an acceptance of something I love. And yeah, when you really love something, you bring it into you and it gives you strength, as candy would for any rational person. So an actual Achilles heel, my first thought was once again, my beard. If I had a stronger beard, I think I'd be in a lot stronger place in life. There's just not enough on the sides. So people just look at me and they see like this guy, his beard. So it's actually too obvious of a weakness. But
wow.
It is obvious.
You should wear a mask on your face. So. No, like a
gorilla one.
Yeah.
Or just wear like a lot of beaded jewelry, Dave, so they just think you're Native American.
I'll grow my hair out. So what about Oedipus, Julia?
Yeah.
Like, how likely is this whole Oedipus thing? Like, let's get into this. This seems like it's a little far-fetched. I don't know.
I think if we turn to Freud.
Yeah, Dr. Sigmund.
He would suggest requires a suspension of disbelief, I think.
I see him as basically a wannabe Homer, basically blinding himself just so he could write an epic, but...
He was like, this is how I get a poem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bad scene.
There are easier ways to fame, I think.
I think so. I hope we're finding them. Yeah. It's not impossible, the Oedipus scene.
I don't really have much to say about it. It weirds me out a little bit. I know I had to read it in high school. I haven't gone back to it. And it's one of those things that I don't want it in my mind. It freaks me out just a little bit.
I think it's supposed to freak you out. Yeah. I don't think it's like a...
It has succeeded as a work of art.
I don't think it's a model narrative.
Yeah.
That jerks.
Here's a question for the Greek expert. If Oedipus's name were to be abbreviated by his fellow Greeks...
Eddie.
Would they call him Eddie? They wouldn't call him Puss.
I don't think it was...
Or Dippus.
Eddie.
Or Dip.
Dip.
Anyway.
Dip Rex.
Dip Rex would be awesome. That would be an amazing, like, remix artist.
Dip Rex. Like, Diplo meets Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So, final question about the classical world. If I'm going to read one book from Homer, am I going Iliad or Odyssey?
Odyssey. There's so many more characters. There's so much less fighting. Definitely the Odyssey, right?
I would have said the Iliad.
Oh, it's more cohesive. You get Patroclus.
But it's just full of suffering.
It's like literally just about the war.
Yeah.
I'd rather read about the trip.
Definitely. If what I'd rather read...
There's Scylla and
sometimes I feel like there's like a duty. I'm like, I must read this thing to bear witness to others' suffering.
Troy.
Yeah, at Troy, because very historical.
Yeah. Extremely historical and recent.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Definitely about the kinds of suffering that continue to plague.
It's very up to date.
Contemporary United States, yeah.
All those kidnapped wives.
Yeah. Just a housing crisis, really.
Good point.
And the thing is, still, you go, yeah, you pick Odyssey because if you want the Iliad, you just go to the classic Brad Pitt film, Troy, and it's giving you everything you need with a lot of handsomeness.
Yeah, that's the artistic masterpiece, I think.
You should have asked, not Homer versus Virgil, but Homer versus whoever directed Troy.
I think the director of Troy really...
Wow.
Yeah, really saw it home.
Well, you've been a great expert, Julia, after all.
I tried.
We learned a lot about classical works and a lot about Lexington. I'm ready to go and eat some Sloppy Joe or whatever it was
Hoppin'
that
Pete,
you
man.
Some Hoppin' John.
Hoppin' John, not
Hoppin'
Hoppin'
John.
Pete. Damn.
Yeah.
That's good.
So we're going to move on to our next section, Julia. Ask Off the Chain. This is where real listeners send us questions, real questions that they want us to answer, want us to weigh in on. And Steele, you're always the one that reads these questions. So I'm ready.
Okay, this is a question from Rocky P. from Albany, New York. So what two living people would you most like to have lunch with? The first person is obviously Vin Diesel, so who else would you like at the lunch? I'd go with The Rock. I hear they don't get along.
That's a terrific question, Rocky. And you did nail it. Vin Diesel is one, certainly.
Did nail it.
Like, if you were doing one living, one deceased, we'd go Diesel and Walker, Paul Walker, obviously. But two living, I'll go Vin Diesel. And man, I don't want to go with what you fed me, but The Rock would be terrific. I would, yeah, I'll have lunch with Rocky, Vin Diesel, and The Rock. That sounds like a
Yeah, The
fantastic
Rock
time.
seems like an upstanding citizen
Yeah.
whom I would love to meet, and you could talk about Heracles.
Yeah, okay,
So,
I got this movie idea for you. I want to make a
you're
pitch.
gonna be really good.
I got a perfect unfollow. She'd be great in the role. How
Wait,
about you,
Julia,
Julia?
what's your answer? Lunch with two living people.
Oh, that's so hard.
It is.
I'm just, who likes food a lot? I'm a bad answerer. What about you, Steele?
Two living people I'd love to have lunch with. Ricky Henderson would be super fun, the baseball player. Ricky Henderson and Karl Malone.
Whoa.
That would be an
Yeah.
incredible lunch.
It could get boisterous.
It would be.
I would just like to see those two guys interact.
But seriously, a lot of really intelligent opinions on global foreign affairs, I'm sure, would be rounding that
Definitely.
table.
Oh, you could talk classical Greek works of fiction as well. Those guys know the Iliad.
They are
That was a
the
bad choice, but thanks, Rocky P, for your question.
Iliad.
Okay, surprisingly, another question from the Jersey Shore. This one's from Mario R. from Rutherford, New Jersey. Have you heard about this movie where Vin Diesel is a witch hunter? Take a look at his
Yes.
fake beard. Please react.
My initial reaction is, of course, this is not fake. Vin Diesel can just grow a beard like that very quickly.
That seems possible.
And I couldn't be more excited. Vin Diesel as a witch hunter throughout the centuries. I believe he's immortal in this film. And I would just say, if you're a witch, take cover. You're in trouble.
I feel pretty strongly that Vin Diesel looks like Tom Hanks in Castaway in this still. So I'm gonna stick with that observation.
First
And
reaction.
it's not an affinity that I would have expected, but that's what I see.
Here's the question I have for you, Dave, before I answer. Isn't Vin Diesel immortal in every movie he's been in? Because he never dies in these movies. That's the whole point of the Vin Diesel movie. He cannot die.
I mean, art reflects life. I believe Vin Diesel is immortal in real life as well. You know,
Okay.
he's like 48 years old. He's old, but look at him. He doesn't look a day over 35.
Never
Good
has.
point. All right, so my thought was, I watched the trailer that you sent me, Dave, and I was just like, is this real? Is it really real? Did they really make this movie?
Yeah, think
Or is
about
this
the
just a
amounts
spoof?
of
Is this a
money that
spoof
went into this film.
trailer?
Oh
It
my
got approved by
goodness.
so many people.
And I just thought, if it's true, if people really paid millions of dollars to make that movie that I saw the trailer for, wow, what a world we live in. That's all I'll say. What a world.
It's amazing.
It's oh. Thanks, Mario P. We appreciate you writing in, keeping questions coming. All right, this next question, great one. This one comes from Neil F. from Atlanta, Georgia. You guys talk a lot about 17th century English litter, and believe me, I appreciate it. But do you have any hard-hitting opinions on 18th century literature?
Oh boy, hard-hitting opinions. My hard-hitting opinion on 18th century literature is I read some in high school and I read three quarters of Moby Dick and I really enjoyed three quarters of it, but I put it down. I didn't need the last quarter. I didn't need to know more.
That's from the 19th century. It's from the mid-19th century.
That's why you're here,
1851.
Julia.
She was
That's why
waiting
you're here.
patiently for you to finish before she tore your head off, dummy.
Oh,
How polite of you.
I'm so embarrassed.
Well, that's Dave's hard-hitting opinion.
I have a lot of opinions about 18th century American and British and French literature.
Lay it on us.
Like, it's underrated.
Yeah.
A lot happened.
A ton happened.
It's important.
Yeah.
And crazy.
Top three?
Wieland.
Yeah. Can't get enough of Wieland.
Yeah. Wieland. I'm just going to name three gothic novels from the late 18th century that everyone should read, which are...
Probably
Wieland,
everyone has read, let's be honest.
The Romance of the Forest.
Oh, The Romance of the Forest.
And The Castle of Otranto. Read them.
Yeah.
Gothic novels.
Book reading assignments from our good friend Julia. Castle of the Torontos, Gothic Forest, and Weed 'em.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I believe.
Weed 'em.
I think that Vin Diesel's witch hunting movie is
classic novel.
Weed 'em.
Yeah. Castle of Tarantulas.
That was close. I was just doing my best here.
Yeah. Good enough.
Reading up the note cards they give me. I don't know. It's printed real small. Okay. Let's do some college questions. We have a lot of young listeners who are kind of aspiring to an education. This one comes from Mia M. from Salt Lake City, Utah. She wants to know, how should I carry my books for college? In high school, I, of course, used a backpack. But is that cool once you leave home?
Definitely a wagon is the answer.
Earned another high five.
I mean, I just think it's very mature, it's very spacious, and it's really convenient.
Yeah. And it can carry more than just books. That's the thing
about
a wagon.
Yeah, like your lunch.
Yeah. A person.
Your child. Your dog. A sapling.
A sapling. Can't tell you how many sapling wagons you see on college campuses these days.
Ask Kanye West.
Wow. I think that's the perfect answer. Mia, go out, get yourself a wagon. You know what to do.
Next question.
Next.
Okay, here's another question. This is from Marcus M. from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You guys all seem pretty familiar with school. How do I pass a class with the least effort possible?
Oh, Marcus, it's all about choosing the right major.
I was going to say the same thing.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Dave knows. What was your major, Dave?
Yeah. It was a communication steal. You get B's if you just you sign up for the course.
If you enroll properly, I heard.
Yeah, that's all. You don't even have to go. I don't think I bought books most of the time, and it really paid off.
Yeah, with your nursing career.
He's doing a podcast. He's a communicator.
Closely related
Julia.
To communication.
Pass the class with least effort possible. Any other tips? Pro tips?
Show up.
I'm going to give a slightly different answer, and this, I expect some ethical controversy ahead of time. College is very expensive, Marcus, as you well know, I'm sure. College credits already cost a lot of money, and many people go into debt, borrow, take student loans. I don't see the functional difference between paying $1,500 a credit and paying someone then on the internet another $100 to do your work for you. If you're already going to pay $4,500 a credit and you're looking for the easiest way to pass the class, why not pay $5,000 for that course and pass it by someone else doing all the work?
And learn nothing.
Yeah, if that's what you're looking for, passing the class with the least amount of effort and you're already paying $4,500 for that class, what's an extra $500? I'm being honest. I mean, that's just how I feel about it. You're asking the wrong question, Marcus.
I worked
Take
really
that,
hard.
Take that, Marcus. Shame on you.
You should do that.
Shame on you, Marcus.
That's right. Shame on you.
But if you do want to pass with the least amount of effort, pay someone else to do it. That's how America happens. You
that
don't want to.
That is literally the least amount of effort.
Right. It's the American
way. I think
way.
You should try really hard. Paid off for me.
Julie is answering the question that you should have asked, Marcus.
Yeah. Then you can get a bunch of degrees.
Yeah.
I should ask Kanye about that, too.
And the thing is, what's even more portable than your degree is the knowledge that you will have gained.
Yeah.
You could take that with you anywhere.
Mm-hmm. In your wagon.
So to review, get a wagon. And Marcus, go to class. Come on, man. This is about your life.
Nice.
That's right. Good job, Dave. Good recap.
We're done taking questions. We're on to Unchained Melodies. So this week, it's animal themed. Every song we've chosen has something to do with an animal. It goes back to we were talking about skunks earlier today. We're just excited. We like animals here. Julia, do you like animals? Do you have something for us here?
I do like animals, and this is a really, I really like dolphins, which swim in the sea. And Beth Orton wrote this really, really great song called Dolphins.
This old world may never change the way it's always been. I know all the ways of war. Can I change it back again? I've been searching for the dolphin in the sea. Sometimes I wonder, do you ever think of me?
She's so effortless.
She's amazing.
So, man. She and Beck did a cover
of... That was pretty.
No Expectations.
Yes.
Which, there's this recording where they get super off-key and they laugh about it.
Yes,
and
that's
it's
the
so
one.
Good.
That's the one, yes.
Yeah. And they just play it out. Yeah.
We're music friends.
Awesome. Yeah. Beck is awesome.
Great song, Julia.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So, I'm going to pick the next one. We were talking about horses and the great state of Kentucky earlier. And I have a kind of heartbreaking sounding song. This was originally in, what was it? The Silence of the Lambs, kind of haunting soundtrack. But this is a cover by an artist named Hayden Thorpe, and it's just beautiful. The song's called Goodbye Horses.
I didn't either.
It's beautiful.
It's almost Anthony and the Johnsons-esque, that voice. Oh.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Thanks, Dave.
It's so pretty when he gets to the chorus, when he's saying goodbye to the horses. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Wow. Well, I was going to play like an up-tempo song. I was thinking about playing George Clinton's Atomic Dog, but that is not the right song to follow this with. So I'm going to play a Bonnie Prince Billy cover by David Gray. It's called One with the Birds.
Leave me alone is all that I say. When I have nothing in me to give away, the purple mountain in her house, she hollers at me, why be inhuman, why be like me, like so many robins, like so many doves, like so many lovebirds, with so many loves, the song of the bobwhite, without any words, We are one with the birds.
When we are inhuman, we're one with the birds. That kills me.
It's amazing.
Bonnie Prince Billy is such an interesting man. He's so prolific. It's hard to... I was really into him for about a year, and I just couldn't keep up. There was too much music coming from that guy.
Yeah, he's a Kentuckian. He's a Louisvillian, actually.
He is.
Yeah,
he lives
in Louisville, and is a real presence there, is pretty involved in the community, which I think is really interesting. I mean, he sort of knows activist friends there and is really... It seems to be pretty in the loop, which, like, is really cool, I think. My morning jacket's from Louisville, too.
Yeah.
Good people.
Kentucky people.
Yeah. I'm next, I think, and I picked Joanna Newsom's Clam Crab Cockle Cowrie, which is a beautiful song.
That means no. Where I come from, I am cold. They're waiting for the day to come. I chew my lips, oh, and I scratch my nose. Feels so good to be a rose. Oh, don't you lift me up.
It's one of those really kind of rare songs where it doesn't build to a chorus necessarily, but it just
so good.
Right, it just sweeps you along. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Yeah, I've never heard that song before. That was beautiful. That hit my sweet spot today.
Yeah.
Good.
What do you want to play next, Dave?
I gotta go Werewolves of London.
Yes!
It's the most ridiculous song I could have picked.
Let's hear it. It's so good. And I was so into it.
Warren Zevon is awesome.
Amazing.
I don't really understand this song other than it's about werewolves having a good time.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho. Get a big dish of beef chow mein. You hear him howling around your kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady got mutilated late last night. Werewolves of London again.
If that's your one greatest contribution to society, like you've done it. That's all you need to do. Thank you, Warren.
A contribution? What was that, Dave? I missed that.
Still, I think we all know what a contribution is.
Okay. Oh, that's amazing. Werewolves of London. So, Dave, I want to follow up your Werewolves of London with my own werewolf song. This is Coco Rosie. There was a minute there where they were like the interesting new band. Didn't last very long. But this song came out and it was great. It's Werewolf.
broken sundown, fatherless showdown. Garden herpes, swollen lip, bottle sip. Yeah, I suck dick, loose grip on gravity force. Sky blinding, crumbling walls. Never sweep away my memories of children's things, a young mother's love before the yearning song of flesh on flesh. Young hearts burst open, wounds bleed fresh. A young brother, skinny and tall, my older walks oceanward in somber slumber, sleeping flowers in the water. But I'm just his daughter, walking down an icy grave, leading to my schizophrenic father. Weeping willow, won't you wallow louder, searching for my father's power.
There's something to me that's like, that song feels like all of the feelings, you know, it's like a very college age angst ridden,
yeah.
But like just starting to write poetry and you're really feeling it so deep, but I like it.
It's interesting that we were supposed to pick animal themed and, but we couldn't help but go mythical beast for some reason.
I know, we should have done all werewolves.
That'd
Cat
been
Power
fun.
Has that great werewolf song.
Yeah. That'd be a good... We should do, like, horror beasts for a theme sometime.
Are you going to play the Halloween song, the Monster Mash?
Monster Mash? It was a graveyard smash.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, Halloween's... That's a couple months away still. Yeah. We'll have to put that on the back burner.
It's soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming. We're only too aware here in Wisconsin.
And still, we've already been planning the Halloween episode for quite some time. Let's not act like we're not super excited about it.
That's true.
Well, those are great songs. Thank you. We're going to close up the show. You've got some book wisdom for us, I think.
Yeah, so Spencer gave me some assigned reading by Ignacio Salone, which was Bread and Wine. And this is the book that's the third in that trilogy. Bread and Wine's the second. There's a guy named Pietro Spina. He's a communist revolutionary that was exiled, and he has come back, and he was living in hiding in a barn in this story. And this is him describing a scene from his life there. There was another opening, big enough to let a cat through, at ground level at the bottom of one of the walls, which I discovered when I moved a big stone that closed it from the inside. I got into the habit of opening it every morning to let in some fresh air in addition to the little that came through the chinks in the door. In fact, to get more benefit from it, I lay down and rested my head quite near it on a handful of straw used as a cushion. There was no risk of my being spotted, because right outside there was a clot of earth that had accumulated against the stone that blocked the hole. Without the stone, it looked like a clot of earth that had been cut in two, and it prevented any passerby who noticed the hole from seeing through it. I stayed motionless for hours with that clot of earth only a few inches away in front of my eyes, and it was my only horizon. I had never looked so closely at the earth before. I had never thought that a clod of earth, when observed at close quarters, could be such a vivid, rich, immense reality, a whole universe, an intricate agglomeration of mountains, valleys, marshes, tunnels, with strange and mostly unknown inhabitants. That, in the real sense of the word, was my discovery of the earth. The strange thing was this: I was born here, in the country, and I've been to half the countries in Europe, and once I went all the way to Moscow for a congress. How many fields and meadows have I seen? I must have seen thousands of hills and mountains, millions of trees, hundreds and hundreds of rivers, but I had never before seen the earth as I saw it then. Just imagine it, grandmother. If police hadn't forced me to hide in a cave after living for several decades, I should never have known what earth is. I must explain that the word earth now has assumed a very precise meaning for me. What it means to me now is, above all, that clod of earth that I saw so closely, got to know so intimately, and lived with for some time. In short, the word earth to me now is like the name of someone I know well. Perhaps you will already have realized it, Grandmother, but I want to make it perfectly clear that there was nothing in any way special about that clot of earth. It wasn't particularly rich or fertile. It was a perfectly ordinary clot of earth. What a moving experience it was one morning when I discovered that a wheat seed had germinated in it. At first I was afraid it was dead, but I gingerly used a bit of straw to move the earth around it and discovered a minute white shoot sprouting from it, a tender, living shoot of the shape and size of a tiny blade of grass. The whole of my being, the whole of my soul, Grandmother, concentrated around that small seedling. It worried me to death that I didn't know exactly what to do to give it the best chance of survival. I still don't know whether what I did was right or not, and I still worry about it. As a substitute for the protection provided by the stone that I had moved, and to shelter it from the frost, I put a little earth on it. And every morning I melted some snow to water it, and I often breathed on it to give it some warmth. That clod of earth with that small, weak treasure hidden in it, alive though threatened by so many dangers, ended up acquiring, in my sight, the mystery, the familiarity, the sanctity of a maternal bosom. And since, for lack of anything else to drink, I too had to use the small amount of snow that I could gather through that opening, I tried to make sure it was clean as possible, though there was always a slight flavor of wood and dung, a flavor of liquid earth about it. And the result was that, in a way, the small seed and I lived on the same food. In a way, we became real companions. I felt my life to be as fragile, as helplessly exposed and endangered as that of the small abandoned seed beneath the snow. And at the same time, I felt my life to be as natural, as alive, as important as its own. In fact, I felt it to be life itself. I mean, I felt it to be not an image, a fiction, a representation of life, but life itself, in its humble, painful, and always endangered reality. And it's absolutely impossible, and it would be only too easy and comfortable, to console oneself with the idea of immortality, the immortality of wheat, when one is trembling about the fate of a particular grain of wheat that one has gotten to know personally and with which one has lived.
Still, that was beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
It was good to meet you, Julia.
You too. All
right, good.
Okay, have a good day.
See you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye. Off the chain.
That's your wheelhouse.
Can of worms, yeah.
I read like 3/4 of Moby Dick a couple years ago, and then I just said, I think I'm good now.
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite book.
Is it really?
Yeah, I love it. But that's all about, like, I'm so depressed that I'm going to run into traffic. I guess I'll get on a boat.